have a steady income if you have the money cut. And I hope they add us out. Yeah, we will live. We're still, we do have documents. Whilst we're still waiting for the sound vision, whatever the thing that is being for it here, she'll have to take us through the document. Because she should have presented what I come to. What you need to know to go to yet and go back, see what we so, okay. Okay, you will then take us through the your presentation, and we've also got your submission. All right, you can. I'm sensitized. I thought it's us that were here yesterday. Now I can see that there are two persons that were before you. If they can just indicate who they are and where they are coming from, I think that would be fine. You will use the mic and next to. I'm Gonda Perez, and I'm from the Health Promotion Development Network.
I am Moses Matheny from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
If you are ready, Ms. Gonda, you can.
Firstly, I'd like to say thank you very much for the opportunity to present our submission before the committee today. I'm still awaiting my colleague who's on her way from the airport. Hopefully she'll be here in time to at least assist with some of the questions that might come. My name is Zugiswa Kota. I come from the Public Service Accountability Monitor. We are a research civil society organization that's based in Grahamstown, and we are affiliated or part of Rhodes University in Grahamstown. Just in terms of the very brief outline just of the submission, much of the contents are in greater detail in the written submission, so I'll try and focus on the key points just to save time and make sure that we focus on what's at the core. My presentation will very briefly look at what the Public Service Accountability Monitor is and why we feel we should be here and what our work is about, just to introduce ourselves. I'll then also go directly into our thoughts on specifically on the bill, and in particular in relation to issues around the funding of the Institute, functions of the Institute, and we're focusing on two items there, which is issues around the data systems and technical support. We've got a few observations and thoughts we'd like to share there. And issues around environment and occupational health. I was unfortunate to have missed the, I think, part of a discussion, I think, around occupational health yesterday morning. So I hope there won't be any repetition, but if there is, I'm sure you'll guide me, Madam Chair. We'll also focus on the accountability and governance structures that the Institute or the bill proposes the Institute should have. And in particular, we'd like to touch on the issue of public representation on the board, given our interests and given our civil society activism or our interest in the context of civil society. We'd also like to briefly touch on the reporting and accountability mechanisms that are proposed, and then conclude and hopefully engage in some discussion. I won't go into much detail, as it's outlined in our submission, around what the PSAM is, but I think it's important to introduce ourselves and be clear on who we are and how we find ourselves here today. We were established in 1999 as a project within an academic department of Rhodes University. At the time, the founders were very much interested in enhancing our democratic dispensation and enhancing, in particular, public resource management. And the hope of the project was to try and facilitate tracking of public funds and ensuring that public funds were used to the best of you know, the abilities of officials, and to ensure that, you know, essentially funds go to where they're meant to go in terms of the realization of particular rights. Many years since then, the organization has changed. We've now gone from being a little project to a slightly bigger organization, part of Rhodes. Our staff complement is modest, but of about 16 staff when we're fully staffed working in South Africa and within sub-Saharan Africa. Our vision, which is written out there, is really revolves around ensuring that engagement between the state and the public promotes accountable governance, and that this leads towards the progressive and sustainable improvement in the quality of life for many. In relation to this, our mission, which is outlined there, revolves around our work, which is applied research, advocacy, and capacity building. And it's informed really by learning across our context. Our notion is around the strengthening of social accountability actors, and when we talk about actors, it's people within communities who work towards social justice, whether it's reporters and journalists who seek to report on issues of education and health, or community members based in non-governmental organizations seeking, again, to enhance democracy within their context. We feel that this will result in the creation and sharing of knowledge that will ultimately support citizens in effectively demanding justifications and explanations from state actors regarding the management of public resources. So this is a really roundabout way, in some respects, of getting to the core of why we feel we should make an input on the bill, and it's around enhancing in whatever way we can the use of public resources, and in this case, the bill is one for which we think we should engage. At the outset, we'd like to outline that we are in full support of the establishment of the Institute of NAPISA, and for this reason, we feel that there are certain elements that we hope we can contribute to in the discussion. I won't speak much on the monitoring and advocacy program, which is the program that my colleague and I come from. I'll let her just briefly introduce herself.
Good morning. My name is Nicola. I'm a health researcher at the Public Service Accountability Monitor.
Great. So both myself and Nicola are within the Modern Advocacy Program, and the core of our work at in the MAP, as we call it, is to see the improvement of public service delivery and enhancements towards the progressive realization of constitutional rights. We look at budgeting and planning and expenditure and performance, in particular in relation to health, education, local government, and human settlements. And we have a researcher who looks at issues of environmental governance as well. So skipping forward to the core of why we are here, we, first of all, I think it's important for us to acknowledge the fact that this country has come a long way in terms of strides made towards the delivery of healthcare, quality healthcare, and access, universal access. So that's something that I think we should feel excited about. What we do, I think, want to also highlight is the fact that for many, and particularly in the context of the Eastern Cape where we come from, many people are still marginalized and systematically left out or by the wayside in terms of quality healthcare. And so for us, this is an important space in which to engage. We also believe that the right to healthcare isn't only about access. There is much more beyond that. And in the context in which we work, we also see that many structural inequities and social factors really are obstacles towards the realization of this particular right. So we feel that the establishment of NAPISA is vital. It's really important towards the realization of these goals. And we want to focus on the research and data analysis aspect of it, which we feel is really important, and in particular around strengthening the systematic management. And these are, you know, this is directly out of the bill and the, you know, the memorandum of the objectives around the bill. So a very text-heavy slide there. I'm talking now directly to the issue of funding of NAPISA and the proposed funding. Section 29 of the memorandum, which talks about the objectives of the bill, is outlined there. And what we wanted to emphasize is that in addition to what was said about the amalgamation, is that funding to create new information and financial management systems has been provided for through the National Treasury in the 2016-17 financial year. I'm reading their verbatim because I think it's not helpful for me to paraphrase. And the memorandum outlines that this significantly reduces the cost of transition. There are advanced discussions within the service around shared corporate functions during the transition processes, reducing the need for additional funding that needs to be made available. Lastly, implications on the personnel budget have been reduced due to the decision to align the staff of NAPISA with the Department of Public Service and Administration's remuneration scales and conditions of service. So I won't begin to even pretend that I know very much about the context of the DPSA and the personnel arrangements. But what's important for us there is, firstly, the encouraging outline that National Treasury is behind the establishment of NAPISA and that funding has been made available. What we'd like to recommend there and outline, however, is that the bill doesn't explicitly make clear what the funding mechanisms that will be necessary going forward for NAPISA. So I think I don't need to tell members of the committee of the very dire situation in many respects in terms of our restraints, economic restraints and fiscal restraints. And I think in order to protect an institute such as this, it would be important for the bill to outline stronger funding mechanisms or ideas of how this will be perpetuated going forward, even given the explanation in the memorandum around what National Treasury has thus far done. So there are many, I'm sure, in the room who might be able to propose stronger and more explicit ideas around the funding mechanisms. We looked at the National Health Laboratory Services and what funding mechanisms currently exist there. And again, you know, we're not experts in that context, but there might be other ways in which this is incorporated into the bill. What was of concern to us and is currently of concern to us is the current labor disputes in the context of the NHLS and the varying allegations around corruption and so on and the poor working conditions. The reason I raise this in relation to the bill and the establishment of NAPISA is that I think we feel it will be really important to craft, in the crafting of the new funding mechanism, to take lessons from what's currently happening in the context of the service, the NHLS, and propose perhaps stronger ways to prevent this happening for NAPISA. We also recommend, in this context, stronger accountability and reporting structures between, for example, NAPISA and the provincial departments. It was stated widely in the media, and there was the reports from the NHLS, that part of the problem and the reason that the service finds itself in such a significant debt crisis is because of poor payments by provincial departments. And for us, the question then is about what structures exist or can exist to ensure that provincial departments do pay over what's owed to the NHLS, for example, and how to prevent this from happening in future. So there are certainly discussions that must happen, but in terms of accountability mechanisms and the extent to which these can be binding, it would be useful to see the extent to which this can be incorporated in the bill. We also make there perhaps suggestions around connections or stronger, clear, more articulated, explicit mechanisms between the CFO and the Minister of Health and between the Minister of Health and the relevant portfolio committee. We'd imagine that there'd be several portfolio committees that the Minister of Health would report to in this regard. But I think, again, there needs to be perhaps more explicit structures or explicit articulation within the bill of these structures. Speaking again directly to what's contained within the proposed bill, Section 3.1 says that the Institute must, and this is in relation to data systems and technical support, the Institute must coordinate, develop, and maintain surveillance systems to collect, analyze, and interpret public and occupational health data in order to guide health interventions. there's no question for us that this is important. It's a vital aspect of the bill, and we're excited to see it in there, particularly around the maintenance of surveillance systems. I think yesterday I was glad to have caught, I believe it was a gentleman from Cancer, who mentioned the gaps around surveillance systems, particularly in relation to the cancer registry, and we feel that's important. But we also would like to say that emphasis on the data systems, there's inadequate articulation of the mechanisms for this coordination and dissemination in alignment, in particular with our country's open data commitments. So, for example, we would have liked to see, and it would be interesting to see the extent to which, when we're looking futuristically into the workings of NAPISA in, 10, 20, 30 years from now, what the current commitments that the DPSA and the Office of the Presidency has made in relation to open data commitments and the open government partnership. Amongst those are talks around making health data or making public data more public. So we would like to see this explicitly outlined in the bill. It's also not entirely clear what ICT needs. Well, it is clear that there will be significant ICT needs in terms of modernization. And for an institute like this, I think it'll be vital to outline, in relation to the vast public health data and surveillance data, what ICT budgets, what ICT planning, what ICT needs there will be. And the bill is rather silent on this, which I think opens up some potentially dangerous gaps. It will also be important in the context of data systems management and technical support to understand who will be responsible for maintaining this data. Health data, as we all know, a lot of it is confidential, but also has a lot of public good inherently in it. So the bill is silent on the maintenance aspects of this health systems data and the surveillance aspects. There's insufficient mention, we feel, again, of open data systems within the bill, and this is an important space. Perhaps there's obviously, scope in supporting documentation, but in the context of the bill, there must be something overarchingly supporting this notion of open access and public access to data. So our recommendation there is that the bill should accommodate ICT and open data needs and expertise, particularly on the board. And this is important not now in the development of those data systems, but going forward. In the context of modernization and protection of data, important data, and allowing that data to be publicly accessible, which I think is something that increasingly we're seeing in our country and we're quite excited by. So in the context of environmental and occupational health, Section 24A of the Constitution provides for the protection of the environment, and in particular around issues of ensuring the health and well-being of individuals. So the two for us are integral. You cannot have one without the other. There's also, again, in this particular constitutional obligation, there's a forward-looking nature of it. So this, I'd like to emphasize this looking into the future and a need to plan accordingly. And so we feel that there is an omission around the National Health and Environmental Policy, for example, so there's silence within the bill around that and the connections. I think someone may have spoken to this yesterday, perhaps to greater detail than we will today. The bill also doesn't adequately cater for Section 24, which is important. And if we begin to talk about the SDGs, which, I think any country is speaking about, the NDP and so on, this omission is rather worrying, given particularly, not only, but particularly in the regions, for example, that we come from, where environmental health aspects and environmental health itself is a fundamental aspect of individuals' well-being in communities. So we feel that this gap could have an impact in relation to the research and monitoring, as well as the policy coordination that the bill seeks to enhance and seeks to support. We do, however, and I think it's always good to commend where commendation is due, we'd like to commend the fact that the bill does include the expertise of an environmental health expert within its structure. So this then, I guess, in some respects would incorporate that aspect, but still the rest of it is rather silent. So now we come to an aspect for us that's quite important, which is public representation and the engagement of the public in a space such as this. Madam Chair, yesterday you asked Professor Shasha around, you raised the question about whether or not he agrees or was happy with the representation of only one member of the public on the board. And in fact, I was really glad you asked that question, because for us, we feel that that's an underrepresentation of the public, of members of the public on the board. There's also an exclusion to some extent of specifically health-promoting civil society organizations. We are not necessarily one of those CSOs, but we do look at health from a rights-based perspective, but we feel that there should be space on the bill for those working on the ground in communities. There's no stipulation, for example, on the eligibility of the community representative. So could I just come onto the NAPISA bill, NAPISA board, rather, and be the community representative? Who is that person? And the bill is silent on that. And we feel, given the importance of representation of the public, that there should be an explicit idea around who can be a representative in regard. We also feel that the geographical representation is unclear. So I think in our country, the diversity that we look at, both in terms of geography but also in terms of health needs and in terms of the impacts of the structural inequities I mentioned earlier, the gaps in Nicola, in fact, contributed the aspect of the submission specifically talking about issues around inadequate health care and provisioning in hospitals, electricity and so on. There are provincial variabilities that I think the bill or the board would benefit from in having a clearer representation across the provinces. We also feel, while on the one hand there is some representation and some idea of the need for technical expertise, we feel there's an underrepresentation of ICT and ICT needs. So there'll be need for data mapping and geospatial health data. So at any given point, we would hope, in terms of dissemination, or production of this information. If someone living in the Eastern Cape wants to know where is malaria most prevalent or how many people have died or whatever the case may be, that information should be available. And I think there's a space for ICT expertise to inform best practice and to inform perhaps the most the best use of available resources, which, as we know, are limited. So we would recommend in this regard the accommodation of more and better targeted public representation. So if there is to only be one person on that board who represents the public, that person must be the best possible according to whatever criteria is deemed necessary according to the needs of the board and the needs of NAPISA. We feel also that there's a need to, again, outline the eligibility criteria, So, for example, the need to be representative of, you know, people who work with children or children's rights, women's rights, and generally those who are marginalized in many contexts. So we feel that this is a gap that really requires attention within the bill. I'm almost there. So the other aspect relates to reporting and accountability mechanisms. And there's, as I mentioned, this is outlined in greater detail in the actual submission that we put together itself. Section 3 requires that the Institute should produce and distribute reports on health and disease profiles, injuries and violence and occupational health. And what we felt, and you know, Nicola could elaborate on this if she wants to, what we felt was that the reports must be produced and distributed more regularly. And further, in fact, the Section 3 also outlines that the Institute must support the health sector response and make recommendations to government on control measures for disease outbreaks and mitigating risks and hazards of injury and violence, cancer and workplace exposure. For us, this is particularly important, and there's no question around that. But what we'd like to recommend and what we'd like to see is a clearer articulation of the binding nature of these recommendations. So if the board or, you know, if NAPISA makes these recommendations to the relevant, well, to the Department of Health, for example, and nothing happens, what then? Are the recommendations binding? Are they not? And if, in fact, the recommendations are made and there's no further action or insufficient action or inadequate action happens or is taken, what are the feedback mechanisms? The bill doesn't necessarily articulate whether or not there even needs to be feedback. So once the recommendations are made to the minister or taken forward, is there a requirement and obligation to give feedback to say we're not going to take this recommendation forward because of ABC? Thank you. Is there not? So we would really recommend a much more explicit articulation of this and incorporation within the bill. Ultimately, really, to strengthen the accountability mechanisms for what we feel is a really important institute with a really important role to play in terms of the delivery of health services. So we will tackle questions together. And just in conclusion, I think we'd like to emphasize the fact that the development of NAPISA is encouraging. It's very important, and we're excited to see it. We would like to see the strengthening of those areas, so the issues around open data and health systems data, issues around governance, issues around the funding, explicit kind of articulation of those areas. We'd really like to see the strengthening of accountability mechanisms within the bill. And I think with some of those, that could, you know, radically make a change in terms of making the Institute a much more meaningful in terms of its mandate. Thank you very much.
I just want to check if your colleague is there anything that, or she will only come in when there are questions.
Yeah, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Zuki has covered everything sufficiently in my mind. Thank you, yeah.
Honourable members and our guests, I want to make a proposal that before we ask questions of clarity, just for a brief 10 to 15 minutes, we have some refreshments and then we come back, because they are going to stand in jail, not being used. Our apologies for catering this delivery. So 15 minutes for just everybody to have tea, coffee. We have been joined by a number of people whom I would like them to introduce themselves, including you, gentlemen.
Yes.
Starting from the lady and the gentleman, and the gentleman behind, and the others. The two there will use mic to tell us your name, and which organization you are representing.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Marco Schmidt. I'm from the German Consulate General, and I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer.
You are from?
The German Consulate General.
Good morning. My name is Adila Maker. I'm from the Southern African Alcohol Policy Alliance, which is part of the Health Promotion and Development Network.
Good morning, Chair. It's Fulan Isaac from Parliament Legal Services.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sam Gallo. I'm from CPLO, the Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office. Thank you.
Johan Peterson, Operation Bakisa Agriculture in Bela Community Health.
The boy, Western Cape, I'm down.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, there was the presentation. So you can, any questions, clarity? Honourable Gonzo, is there something? Any clarity? Honourable Mahlalela.
Sorry, Chair. The challenge is that they put small teaspoons, so I was struggling to finish.
That is why they are called tea. They are not called their teaspoons. My apologies.
No, thanks. Let's welcome the presentation. I must say, for me, it's a very, very good presentation. The only difficulty or challenge is that all the the holes that we have identified, we have left it to ourselves to formulate, to come up with new formulations. Because we have raised quite a large number of issues, which for me some of them are very critical in importance, but you have not created a formulation, so you want us to do the formulations ourselves, which we might, at the end of the day, when we do the formulation, distort whatsoever what you wanted at the end of the day to see happen. Starting with the funding structure, what is your view in terms of what you are proposing? Practical, you are saying we must have, the bill must create strong accountable structures. Are you saying the current proposal is not strong enough? And therefore, what in practical terms must be included in the bill to strengthen that accountability that you see it's not very strong? Because you do have the PFMA. You do have, and the PFMA requires that there must be establishment of internal audit teams and all those teams that must strengthen the accountability in terms of how to effectively and efficiently utilize the resources that are allocated to any institutions. But taking into account that some of these things happen regardless of this current arrangement of the PFMA, those things do happen. So in your view, what are the other extra additional measures that needs to be added into the bill that will then strengthen that accountability and ensure that we limit or minimize the wastefulness in relation to the state resources or fund? And then in your view, you are saying the information must be accessible to the public. How do you want us to structure it inside the bill? Because the understanding is that all institutions are required to produce quarterly reports, which quarterly reports becomes public. And at the end of the financial year, they are expected to produce annual reports, of which those annual reports becomes public information and public knowledge. If these measures are not sufficient, what do you think needs to be added beyond that requirements that are required so that we make sure that we achieve that public access to information if the current arrangement in your view is insufficient? What do you think we need to do about it so that we are able to improve that? And then on the environmental and occupational health, do you want us to add it as part of the sixth divisions? Because there are five divisions that will be for NAPISA. Do you want us to add it to be the sixth divisions, the environmental and occupational health? And in your view, you feel that currently there's nothing happening around environmental and occupational health. And therefore, it should be part of NAPISA. Or you feel that what is currently happening is insufficient, it needs to be given the status of it being lifted to be part of NAPISA process. Just to get that clarity so that you understand whether you want the bill to add that as a division, or you want the bill to say something about it. And if you wanted the bill to say something about it, to add it as part of the functions in Section 3 of the bill, or to be added into the division and therefore add as one of the functions in Section 3 of the bill. And then on the composition, somewhere you are adding one community representative, but somewhere you are saying the inclusion of at least two members of the public. It's just confusing me. If you can just clarify that, because there's somewhere where you are saying, I'm not sure whether it's you saying that or is the bill. Let me just check. Because we have bolded it. The bill says one community representative. So you are saying that is insufficient. You want an additional one. It means you want two community representatives. And why do you think one is insufficient? And you want ICTs, just to clarify whether it's the understanding that you want ICT representation as well to be part of the board, just that category in its own to be included in the as part of the board. The binding nature of the recommendations. Do you want it binding in the context of the public protector? Because I see there are many people who are now complaining since that judgment, who feels that they also have to have binding. I know the Auditor General is arguing the same. And the Human Rights Commissions will want to argue the same. And the Commission on Religious and Linguistic will also want to argue the same. And you are also arguing the same, that whatsoever recommendation that NAPISA is making shall be binding. If you can just clarify that, do you want us to put it in the legislation so that at least we understand that it must be part of the legislation, and where do you think we need to put it as part of, because this issue of recommendation is mentioned under as part of the functions of NAPISA. And then if we then want to make binding, under which section will you prefer it to be put into the bill? So that at least we understand where, if we agree, where it should be located in that way. Yeah. No, thanks.
Thank you. No, thank you, Chair. I'm sorry. Your hand was not up. Do you want to? Oh, sorry, I didn't see it. Okay.
Most of the stuff that I was going to ask has been asked already. And we are talking about public funds. Maybe we should put us at rest, our minds at rest, that what do you mean by public funds and which other funds are they, government funds or what? Because all the funds that government uses are public funds. They use it for specific things, but for the public. So if we are talking about public funds, there are some other funds that are not public funds, which are maybe private funds or what. We are talking about government. Okay, so maybe if you can unbundle that a little bit, because it's right in as your usual statement. And that's where the whole thing starts. You know, if we can get that clear, then we can move forward. Then, can you hear me? Okay. Do you engage government departments, or you just go and do research without getting to the government department and asking them things and to explain things to you? Because it looks like this is an academic exercise. And we here deal with reality. No. Bread and butter issues, reality, not academic. They're too high for us. We deal with real reality here. So if you could take some time to go to government departments, there are government departments, there are public departments which are run by some people who are representative of the people. So you have the right to walk in there and ask them questions. And if they don't, there is always the law that you've got the right to the information. I'll come to that. You formulated this because you discern something amiss in the way public funds are being used, or what? Because you can't formulate this type of thing if you do not discern something amiss in the whole body politic, in the whole way the government is using your money, you know, public funds. They are your money. If you feel they don't use it properly, you've got the right to challenge them or to make representation. Yeah. What action do you think must be taken to remedy this? I think I wrote some two more questions. Yeah, you mentioned something about diversity and demographics and representation. That will be that tall story. And for every community to be represented in this particular organization, it will be, the whole country will be there. They won't be able to do anything. So, and of course, they don't just pick anybody up in the street and come join. You represent the public. You have to apply, or they have to check your bona fide and your capability to do what is expected of you. I think you don't just walk in and say, me, I represent that community. I'm going to be in this committee. And this one is my neighbor. He represents another demographic. This thing, it. I don't know. I want clarity because the more I look at your paper is good. Make no mistake about it. Don't be frightened. It's good. You did a very good work. But it's just that maybe when you unhandle it and when you relook at it, you can have a very powerful document that will be used as representation, not at this format. Like he said, what do you expect us to do? What must we do? You just say we recommend, and so on and so on. So we may not have been thinking about the way you think. That's why diversity helps, because you may be thinking about something else which I may have missed, or which I was not thinking of. And together we can make this very strong. Yeah, let me just not wait. I've written some other things, but I just wanted to say, please, make sure that what we are saying, you go and reuse to strengthen your well-written document.
From my side, it's comments, general, but I want to be explicit. The unfortunate part, you made an example about a province where I live. And I want to challenge you, as they are saying, don't do an academic work, go to the ground, because you are general. And I'm saying this not because I'm trying to be defensive and of the department. I know there are weaknesses, there are shortcomings, but there are good stories to be told in the Eastern Cape. They're from Grahamstown. So I'm saying as the paper is good, but the shortcoming and its limitation is that it's academic. And if you then want to be part of this, and I think Honorable Mashalela, this was my question, was going to be on a different way. That have you ever communicated with the department? Are you aware of what the department is doing? He was putting it more on the documents that, yes, are a public knowledge. But again, I think it's a responsibility, not only the National Department of Health, not only the Provincial Department of Health, but also the district where Grahamstown in terms of health, so that you are then able to really be to point on some of these issues. The last thing is that as much as you want us to account, but you did say that your funders want you to do ABCD. I'm going to be very mischievous. I say, but who are your funders? Because if you want us to do ABCD, it's a two-way process. We must also know who is funding you, so that we are able to. But I think I want to share the same on a very serious note, the same that it is really a good paper, encouraging that it's young people, young females that have got a passion on health, but there are some issues that you... I think most of the questions have been raised by members. I'll hand over to you to comment if there are any other questions. None. Okay.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and to the members of the committee. I have to admit that I think I'll struggle to address all of the issues, but I certainly have written all of them down. And for those that I don't address directly, we'll certainly make it a point, if the committee allows us, to strengthen our submission and perhaps provide additional input. I think I'll start at perhaps a little bit randomly in my approach and we can tackle some of the input. Definitely, I think in the context of acknowledging the space and acknowledging the realities on the ground, that's always been central to our work and an important space for us to work. So I think by saying that we are part of Rhodes University, it does make it seem as though we're an academic project, and that the fact that we were born as part of an academic department might make it seem as if we are academic. In fact, a lot of the work that we do is precisely that. Our theory of change says that you cannot hope to influence change if you don't engage with the policymakers, if you don't engage with the duty bearers themselves. So I think our work would be futile if we didn't make the time to go into departments. My particular passion is education. Before heading up this program, the Monitoring and Advocacy Program at the PSAM, I was an education researcher. And one of the biggest things that was really important for us was, on the one hand, I think, again, going back to the Eastern Cape, it's a province where everyone says, the system is broken, education is a disaster. And for us, what was really is always important to engage with those who work in that context, those who make decisions in that context about education, the learners, the teachers, but in particular, the members of the executive in that department. So we've always made an attempt to, first of all, understand the realities. So it's one thing to say the matric outcome is X or health outcomes are X and they're terrible, but it's another to say what then? So the research that we do is not, I think for any academics in the room, they would laugh at me if we did use the term academic in that context, but it is academic in as far as being evidence-based. So when we speak to an MEC or we speak to the head of a strategic planning unit or we speak to a teacher or a district director in education or a hospital registrar or an HOD, we speak given the information that we have at our end and seek to, one, understand, but also to see the extent to which our recommendations actually make sense in the context that they are familiar with and in the context that they directly influence. So I think just to put members at ease, our work entails, in fact, we have to go into departments and we have to engage with public officials. That is at the core of our work. And perhaps I didn't spend enough time articulating that at the beginning. We also acknowledge the power that is within the space we are in at present and the power of oversight institutions. And for us, engaging with members of portfolio committees, and not only, in fact, we do spend a lot of time at BSHAW, a fair amount of time engaging with portfolio committees in the legislature, because we understand the importance of the policy-making process, the legislative process, and that oversight, and that without it, so much goes wrong. And so for us to try and influence that is about engaging with members of committees to say, one, what is the reality, and two, are there ways in which the things we see from our end could better influence decision-making within the context of various departments. So this is another space, in fact, for us where engagement is critical and where understanding, for example, how the legislative space works is critical. The issue of the public representation, the bill itself says one, and I must admit that our recommendation around at least two isn't really based on any scientific approach except to acknowledge that there must be greater representation. And the Honourable Member, you rightly raised the fact that we cannot hope to have the entire country represented on that board. It would be impossible. It would be untenable. It would be a gargantuan kind of task to try and get done. But what we do feel is that there still is a need to have representation of the voices, for example, of women and voices of those who work with the youth, if not the youth themselves, on a board such as this, not purely for representation's sake or tokenism in a way, but really acknowledging that there are difficulties and health difficulties in particular in terms of access and even in research where an institute with, which is not to say that an institute that would have a primarily Gauteng-based board, for example, wouldn't be able to do good work, but I think that there is something to be said for greater representation. I mentioned the eligibility criteria, and certainly we wouldn't want to have anyone come on board, but again, the bill doesn't say who. So if there isn't an explicit idea of who's allowed to and who isn't, there's no way for a member of the public to say, oh, I can join, oh, but I can't because I'm insolvent. Or, I mean, that's a bad example in this context because it's not a financial institute, but that's the kind of thinking. And yes, Honourable Member, you raised the issue around we raised a lot of problems and didn't, and perhaps a lot of it is left in the hands of the committee. We would be very eager to find ways to bolster our recommendations in this regard, particularly in relation to the funding mechanisms. So perhaps we contradict ourselves in saying, on the one hand, that the NHLS model is flawed or is failing. And still in our detailed recommendations or submission, we then say perhaps the use of a trust might be a potential funding mechanism. But I think we must admit at this point that beyond the regulations within the PFMA and Treasury regulations, there isn't a lot for us to recommend in that regard explicitly, except that even in the context of entities that are required to report on a quarterly basis, an institute such as this, I think one of the things that we're trying to articulate is that there must be explicitly written into the bill. So yes, the PFMA says that, but to some extent, when it isn't black and white, even in the context of a bill supporting an institute, it's easier to kind of follow up on that and argue a point if, for example, NAPISA or the board isn't reporting on a regular basis. But certainly the PFMA is a rigorous supporting legislation, but as we've seen in many contexts, that implementation is an issue, which is why we're then arguing this issue of the binding nature or potentially binding nature. Of course, that does then entail a lot of other legislative or litigationary kind of approach, which I think isn't always useful, but we feel that in the event that the board were to be constituted or by members who perhaps are not as accountable as they could be, there should be something to push that level of accountability written into the bill. Quarterly reports, you mentioned, currently it's very difficult to access information. So we do, fortunately, we have tried to build relations in the context of departments where if, let's say, we wanted to access the third quarterly financial report, if it's not on a departmental website or it's not available, if you physically go to the department, it's very difficult for anyone to find that information without having connections. And that shouldn't be the case. So our arguments around the regular dissemination and publication is actually about saying that information should be, yes, it's public, but it should be visible and accessible in an easy way. And currently, very many institutes and very many public entities don't make that information available to a member of the public, whether it's, you know, online or if you go into a department, it'd be very difficult to say, I'd like, you know, the quarterly reports for A, B, and C. Very inaccessible to an ordinary member of the public and for even someone advocating for change. So if Professor Shashin Shasha yesterday, as he was saying, you know, pulled money out of his own pocket to do particular data work, I think that's problematic. And an institute such as this should be able to provide that information with ease for anyone who has, you know, the intentions to seek change as a member of the public. So that's that access issue and public information. The public funds question is exactly that we understand the responsibilities on the one hand of all of us to ensure that, you know, funds are used efficiently and effectively and there's no wasteful expenditure. And I think it's not just about public officials. It's also the duty and of citizens to ensure that that happens. I think there's a at the risk of kind of eating into other people's presentation time and having people fall asleep because of my voice. The only other questions, perhaps, unless there are pressing questions that I haven't addressed and that I must address, the others that I think I would like to touch on are around the... There's something I wrote down, excuse me. I think that was actually it, Nicola. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's it. Thank you very much. I'm sorry that was a long response.
Whom do you think can fall asleep when you speak? How can you? Nobody is. I've been looking around. Everybody is listening attentively. What are you implying? But no, thank you very much. You have raised the issues. The DG is here at an appropriate time. I think she was here yesterday when we were outlining the process. At the appropriate time, the DG, that's why the department is here, led by the DG, is that all the issues that you are raising, she will then have to answer. But in terms of your interaction, there's a gap, and in my view, I have always been under the impression that that's what researchers do. They don't only speak to public representatives or members of the EXCO or administrators, but they speak to communities. And there's a gap. You didn't talk. You talk about Bishop. You didn't say, I went to we speak with people, Kwaloki, in Grahamstown, we've got. So there's that gap. And I'm assuming we have forgotten about it, but if you have not, it is important that you could, as a group and or as an institution that is more interested in community, in ensuring that the sector serves its people. The second thing, the question that Honorable Mashalela raised, that, but you're throwing it back to us. We will give you an opportunity. It will be by the end of next week or midweek. Look into, try and attach your. I'll make an example about community representatives. If you say there must be two, why? If you say there must be nine, is it in line with provinces? I'm just making an example. So try, will allow you to that opportunity. You have got Ms. Machalamba's email address. Send that, because we are going to deliberate. So when we deliberate, we must deliberate on the basis, looking at your submissions and in terms of what you are proposing. So I will. I think that is what we will. As much as you have outlined, then formulate. If you think clause three, section three, clause 2A, I make an example, is not formulated in a manner that you will appreciate, then formulate a proposal so that when we discuss, we deliberate, we look into the formulation in the bill vis-a-vis what you are proposing. I think, honourable members, that is the presentation. Thank you very much. They are young. They are energetic. I don't know why do they think that we are going to sleep when they. No, thank you very much. Yes, I'm not quite sure that because it's Women's Month or it's because you must try and recruit males to be interested in health issues. Thank you very much. We are now going to get a Health Promotion and Development Foundation network. You can come this side if you need some connection for IT, or you'll speak to your document.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the committee for allowing us an opportunity to do our presentation on the NAPISA bill. First of all, I'd like to congratulate the Department of Health and all those who were involved in the formulation of this bill. I think it's a very important step towards realizing the constitutional rights of access to health. First of all, who are we? We are a network of individuals and institutions who believe in health promotion as a vehicle to achieve healthier communities. We've been lobbying since 2011. The members are mainly individuals from the South African MRC, the National Council Against Smoking, Soul City, Priceless at Vips School of Public Health, the UCT School of Public Health, and SAPA, South African Alcohol Policy Alliance. Our aim is to lobby for the establishment of a health promotion foundation and to achieve healthier communities and to realize the health rights in our constitution. So what is health promotion? So health promotion is the process of enabling people to increase control over and to improve their health. This moves beyond the focus on individual behavior towards a wide range of social, political, and environmental interventions. So in some countries, notably in FIC Health in Australia, Thai Health, Thailand have set up health promotion foundations They are mainly funded from a percentage of alcohol or tobacco tax, sugar tax, and this is used as our promotion, our public health strategy. An independent health promotion foundation can help conflicts of interest when it comes to corporations seeking to fund health promotion to influence policy. If we come directly to the NAPISA bill, firstly, we think there's a missed opportunity. NAPISA bill does not mention health promotion at all. In the preamble, it speaks about prevention. We think that the preamble should recognize the importance of health promotion as a strategy to improve health of populations. We think that health promotion should be one of the foci of NAPISA. And we think that an expert in health promotion should be part of the board. And we believe that one of the functions of NAPISA should be to work with civil society towards the establishment of a health promotion foundation. So the bill as it stands, the primary focus seems to be on surveillance, with a strong focus on the ill. So we believe that we're missing an opportunity here that helps people to remain ill, to remain healthy and to prevent disease. Health promotion is ongoing. It can't just be a one health day, a diabetes day, or TB education. It needs to be a broader system of activities that helps to promote health. In the bill, on communication, it seems that it's a response to health emergencies and not as a way of working that can be used to promote health and prevent illness. And then health promotion is generally intersectoral, and this is an opportunity, we think, for health promotion programs that go beyond just prevention. So the activities of the Health Promotion Foundation is generally inclusive, works across all sectors of society. So we believe that you promote health not just in the health sector, but it needs to include other sectors of society, transport, police, everything else that has an impact on health. Health promotion has health and economic benefits, as has been shown in other countries. Health Promotion Foundation engages in advocacy, research, and demonstration projects, in funding of healthy activities, so sports activities, soccer in schools, in athletics, leisure, income generation, etc.
We thought we just want to share with you one kind of health promoting activity that we've recently been involved in, and what a future health promotion foundation could support and engage in. Recently, the South African Breweries launched a campaign called Beers for Africa in partnership with the Stop Hunger Now South Africa NGO. Stop Hunger Now has been rebranded as Rise Against Hunger, and the patron is Grash Mashal. The problem with the Beers for Africa corporate social investment activity is that it promoted the idea that if you sell beer, they would raise money to support students that are hungry, and specifically they are supporting students at Wits and University of Johannesburg. And what it ignored is the relationship between poverty and alcohol. Alcohol in itself reduces the amount of money available for basic needs like education, food, health, and at the same time, poverty, there's a response to consuming alcohol as a stress reliever in all sectors of society, but including people that experience poverty. What the campaign did is that it increased the beer size or the package. So it moved from a 6-pack to an 8-pack. And they were saying that they are trying to share with Africa, with South Africa, what is available in the Southern African countries, the different kinds of beers. But it ignored the fact that in South Africa, alcohol is one of the largest contributors to death and disability, that we have a binge-drinking culture. Even though we have less than 50% of people that drink in the country, we have an enormous amount of people that drink to get drunk and not drink to socialize. And I don't know if you've heard of this, but when people that drink, they would put a 6-pack, and in this case it would be an 8-pack, they would put it on the table as the starter. It is not necessarily something that they share, but it's something to be consumed and finished. So when you put a bottle of whiskey on the table, it's to finish the bottle of whiskey. It's not to sip on it. And that we have a large dependency problem. And what the campaign did, what SAB was promoting, is that you drink the beer, we'll take care of the children, and we'll take care of the students. So spend your money, someone else will pick up the tab to feed the students. And that was a really problematic concept that they were promoting. So as the Southern African Alcohol Policy Alliance, in partnership with organizations like the MRC, UCT, the Human Research Council, the Children's Institute, the Synagogue Link Fellowship, we lobbied for Stop Hunger Now to reconsider their relationship with SAB, which they have come back and said that they don't have a policy around taking money from the alcohol industry. And we approached SAB and asked them to stop the campaign. There's no problem in any corporate giving money to a worthy cause, but we asked them to stop promoting the sale of beer on the basis that they will feed hungry children. And they said they're not making money, they're just raising the money to feed the hungry students. We launched a petition on Avaaz. We engaged with lots of writing to and fro to organizations like the Gresham Massal Trust and UNICEF. And then in partnership with many other organizations continued, and as of last Thursday, the SAB decided to withdraw their campaign and have committed to giving money directly to Stop Hunger Now without selling the beer or promoting the sale of beer as a means to raise money. And what we are saying as the Health Promotion and Development Network is that the establishment of a health promotion fund and foundation would allow this kind of advocacy, but also vigilance and monitoring around the health, around activities, and in this case, corporate activities that could impact on health and send wrong messages, both socially, social developmentally, as well as from a health perspective.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, honorable members. There is the presentation, honorable Thembi Kwayo, honorable James, honorable Ndaba, and honorable myself in that order.
Thank you very much. What I can say is there is a lack of specification into the anticipated contribution as the business of the day, which inquires into possible amendments, if any, into the sections of the bill. A lot has been said about, I think, we think that this and that is missing. But like I said, there isn't, you know, that that wow effect to say section this and that, which is reading like this. We recommend that you can add 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 or change the formula. And the example that is given, the example of successful lobbying, I think all those information belongs to another day, the discussions of another day, not necessarily the discussion that was supposed to be tabled today. Sorry. Thank you.
Honorable James.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me say that I'm happy that the importance of health promotion has been mentioned in a number of presentations. Because, you know, I'm very passionate. I think the DG knows how passionate I am about the health promotion. And unfortunately, you spoke after Uzugiswa has spoken, who has beautifully put how promotion should be included in the bill, which I think she has done justice to just your presentation just now. I think I'm just happy that it has come up, and also giving solutions to some of the challenges of health that it has to be given to the people. Information has to be given to the people so that they can take responsibility of their health, not necessarily rely on going to clinics, but prevent going to the clinics at times. And I'm glad this has come. I just want to say that it's a comment on Honourable Chair. Thank you so much.
Honourable Maisel.
Thank you, Chair. Well, nice to hear from knowledgeable people about mobilizing and networking. I think you are a group of network of organizations that have networked, come together, and that's commendable. But you see, hey, you are not going to, let me put it this way, you won't kill the enemy by just cursing it too much. It doesn't help. So if you were getting all these corporations or your network to contribute a bit and have a cooperative and produce food for these children, it will actually solve the problem rather than curse the other ones and say he's making money out of the beer and children are. Poverty is the greatest social cause of ill health. It's poverty, nothing more. And because of the skewed development of our country and historically and otherwise, we need to deal with that. It's no use cursing the enemy and then you hope it will die. It won't. It will find another way of muffling in another way and continue. But if we say, let's solve this problem, all these cooperatives, all these groups, bit money, get to the Department of Agriculture, ask for a big farm, and produce food for the children. That is much more, will be much more appreciated because then it will feed the children. And it's no brainer that once you feed them, you remove their hunger. So you won't blame anybody. You can tell them to go and jump in Duma Lake because now you've got something to offer the children. When you remove something, you must give them something better, isn't it? You're giving them better food. And the unemployment, the youth who are running around doing nothing, having yaupe, will be made productive on a farm. And they will get food themselves. So I didn't want to ask a lot of questions. I just wanted, as a caveat, to say poverty is the greatest social driver of ill health. And the hunger is the manifestation. And you can't drive away hunger by discussing it all the time. So he better do something about it, and it's doable. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Ndaba.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I think I'm covered by Honourable Tembekwayo and Honourable myself, but I also wanted to ask the group on whether they were lobbying us also to endorse them as one of the strategic partners to NAPISA or whatever, to the department. I'm not sure, Chair, because when you were listening to what they were presenting in terms of what South African Brewery did with Karasha Marshall, to me it sounded as if they want us to endorse them to be one of the recognized a foundation or whatsoever, and I'm not even sure, because they said one of the functions of NAPISA should be to work with civil society. Obviously, Chair, that is it's a normal practice. They do work with the Ilokujana, my NGOs, Wonke, they are being recognized. Whenever you want to make your submissions, those submissions, like even here in Parliament, you can come and present your submissions. So I'm not sure why should we prescribe for NAPISA to work with civil society, which is something that is standard. So I'm not sure, Chair, but I'm sure this portfolio committee cannot endorse any organization to be a strategic partner whatsoever. Thank you very much.
Yes, sure. Thank you very much, Chair. The first question around the lack of specifications, we would like to see health promotion mentioned in the preamble. That was the one specification, and if there's no other, because it mentions prevention, but does not mention health promotion specifically. So we think that in the preamble, there should be a mention of health promotion as a strategy to improve health. We think that in the foci of NAPISA, health, again, prevention is mentioned, but there's no mention of health promotion specifically. And we think that's an opportunity to put health promotion firmly on the agenda. And health promotion is mentioned in the by the Department of Health in most of their documentation. So we think that this should be part of NAPISA as well. The other specification is the expert on health promotion as a member of the board, and that the function of NAPISA is not to promote ourselves. Far from it. We do not want to be part of NAPISA. We are an independent organization. But an independent health promotion foundation has been found to help to prevent disease and promote health and to focus on the determinants of health, so people do not need to be surveyed because they are healthy. They are moved towards a healthier population. So I think that's all the questions. If you look into the bill, it has got sections. Now, what members are saying is that when you want something to be changed or to be added, you point to that section. Section A said ABCD. This is what we want to be added. Put it in writing, not in the. Yes, in terms of the preamble you said, but in terms of the sections, representation, this is what you are saying. You see what the composition of the board and who then is to be part of the board. If you want something there, you point to that. I think you heard what we said to the previous. That is our business for today. And again, as we have said previously, that we are then to deliberate. We are then to allow the department at some point to respond on some of the issues that has been raised. That's number one. Number two, of who you are, what you are doing. It has got another day. We're interested in that. You have made an example about lobbying, where around the issues of nutrition, we have got a passion about nutrition in the country. He's one of those, Honorable Maisela, who is, if you want to come in front of the committee and make a presentation about your lobbying, about what you think, the members of parliament must look, the department, you can formally write a letter and request to the secretariat. So you have mixed two things. We understand that you saw an opportunity to come in front of the committee. There's nothing wrong with that. But it is also important that you ask the secretariat that what is expected of us, so that you don't come here and feel as if we are trying to be, not that we are undermining or we are downplaying the work that you are doing, but our brief is that what are you saying about what is here and what would you like to be changed, to be added, to be deleted. I hope you, so that is why I would then say by next week, just if you can, in where you pointed, tell, have a pager in this section, blah, 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 so that when it will assist us when we are then making some deliberations. Then if you want to come us and tell us about nutrition and your lobbying and whatever and the dangers of this, which company, your strength in that field, your interaction with the department, you can do it at another time. I hope I hope we are on behalf of the committee. I hope you understand exactly what I'm trying to. But yeah, thank you very much for wanting to be part of this process. It's a very important process because it's an institution that we think that it will really assist in the assist the sector to have a knowledge and to also be empowered and to empower people on a number of issues that have been raised here. But that is the advice that we will give you in terms of the bill itself. Okay. All right. We have got members will see that we have got this. Nihau has resubmitted a presentation. So keep that, Honourable Members, as part of your documents, because we'll then assist. So all those that are here, that have made presentations in areas where we said they must make a submission, they must do that so that they are not closed behind. We are emphasizing this because we know for a fact if the organizations that are representing civil society, if they don't see the things that they were talking about here, they quickly go to court and say, no, we were not consulted. We are again giving you another avenue that you can make those submissions, the issues that we've put. So that is why we have got this from now. And we will then, I'm told, I don't know, it's this time now, we are, oh gosh, lunch is going to be served at 1 o'clock. So lunch is served, everybody must come here. I don't know what is the time is 30 to 12. It must not be a wasteful expenditure. Oh, 11:45. So lunch will be served at 1 o'clock for those who want to. In fact, it's for all of us, people that indicated that they are going to be here. All right. Those who want to have a sightseeing in this August House, this building, this institution, which is called Parliament, they can do that and be back at 1 o'clock. As those of you who are not members of Parliament are leaving, I will humbly request the members of the committee to just say there's one issue that we need to raise, which has got nothing to do with NAPISA. Thank you very much. We've come to the end of the 2 days of our public hearing. We come back at 1 o'clock.